I think less so about going into it being like, I know what I'm doing and I'm great. And it's more so about, you know, if there's someone sat across the room that you think they look cool, they look like my kind of person, or I know a bit about them. And it's having the balls to go over and say, just start a conversation about anything. Going to Reading Festival, watching the photographers go into the pit, I just remember thinking, how the hell do I get into that position? Like, I just finished my uni degree and I was like, holy crap, this isn't a little van tour. Completely out of my comfort zone, but also was just absolutely like clawing and ready to be in that situation.
Hello, everybody. In today's episode, I'm speaking with the delightful Phoebe Fox, who you probably know if you follow any music photographers on Instagram. She's probably best known for her work with Anne Marie, Grace Carter, Holly Humberstone, The Amazons, Arlo Parks, and many, many more. Honestly, if you know anything about music photography, you'll know that Phoebe is basically one of the queens of it. Very humble, very down to earth, and really lovely to speak to. In this episode, we talk all about camera gear, imposter syndrome, how to find your niche, how to find bands to work with, but also talking about the pressure that you can feel whilst shooting a festival, knowing that there are so many people wanting to do your exact same job. I really hope you learn something from this, and if you're an aspiring music photographer, that you can take something away from this conversation.
There's like a lot about you online, and also I know a lot about you anyway, because I've known we've been in each other's spaces for years. We've actually only met in real life, dear listener, if you're listening to this. We've met once, maybe twice. Not many times.
I think twice.
The times we have met has been very much of like a hi, bye.
Yeah, like a hi, I'm just going to run off and I'm just doing this. Or like, you're just needing to go over there, but it's okay. But like, hi.
The one time I mainly remember it was at Community in 2019, and we were hanging, well, you were hanging, I don't bring me into this. You were hanging out with Maggie Rogers, and I fucking love Maggie Rogers. And I was like, okay, I want to go hang out with these guys because I love Maggie. I just love her music. I think she's amazing. And I was like, okay, I need to be in this space. So I think that's the time I distinctly remember talking to you.
She's an absolute icon. That day was so nice. I feel like Community Festival is such a great one because you're not, I don't know how to explain it, you're not worried about where you are. You know, when you're in Finsbury Park, it's like it's so familiar. You're bumping into people that you know from all different parts of London and different friendship groups. And it's only a day. So everyone's there on the same day at the same time. There's no like missing each other, which is really fun. But no, I remember meeting you at Reading. It was like pissing down with rain. It was horrible outside and everyone was wearing wellies and it was like everyone was miserable and we were hiding in the Festival Republic tent, I think it was.
Oh, and I remember, yeah.
Harriet,
I remember
introduced
that.
Me to
I remember
you.
That.
You were like, oh, like maybe one day we'll be in the pit together. And everyone was like, yeah, sick. And then like literally 6 months later it happened.
I think I was drunk.
No, I don't think you were drunk. I think you were like just loving life at the festival. Rightly so.
No, I honestly, I like, I'm not gonna lie, I put you on like a pedestal for the majority of my career so far, and I've just been like, she's an absolute icon.
No way, that's so nice.
Honestly, have like absolutely admired your work for so long. Feels nice and full circle. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. I know, like past me would have been like absolutely crying at this interaction.
What? Why?
I don't know, man. The music industry is crazy and people, you're made to think that people are a lot more like, no offense, but a lot more important than they are. So I think you kind of like...
Yeah, and also a lot cooler than they are.
You went to Brit, which I feel like everyone went to Brit. Like, the entire cohort.
Thing is, I didn't think, when you're there, you don't think that anyone actually goes to Brit. You think it's just people that are like way older and like, oh, they must have had like a heyday in, at a certain time. And then you leave school and suddenly like, 3 years later, every single person around you, like sat on set somewhere, and you start talking to people and you're like, oh, so what's your background? And they're like, oh, I went to Brit, I'm from Croydon. Oh, I'm from Croydon. And you're like, wait, what?
And also, like, we grew up quite close together because like, I grew up in Purley, which is like 15 minutes from Croydon, and you grew up in Sutton. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's, I don't know if you know Izzy Townsend. She's from near us too. And it's just like, it's just so many and you're like, what happened? Like, why didn't we know each other when we were at school?
Another thing, there's so many photographers from our area. You know what I think it is? I've got a bit of a hypothesis about why RNs, you know, a lot of creatives come out from there. I think it's because we're so close to both the kind of like countryside landscape as well as the kind of grey town that you really learn to appreciate what's around you and look at things in a certain way that and then not take them for granted, because the second that you have more of one, you start craving the other. I think it just makes you pay attention a little bit more in that sense. And yeah, I feel like that must be something towards there being so many photographers from that like 4 mile radius.
That is so, I had never thought of it like that. And I think that's actually exactly true. Something very strange about the fact that, yeah, there are so many of us just in this really weird, like, niche part of Croydon.
Yeah, but also it's like close enough to London so that if stuff's going on, you know, it's not a real ball ache to go in and shoot for the day and then come out. But you've also got that space to kind of process and think. It just does make sense that, you know, you're not part of the whole hustle and bustle all the time, but you've got that countryside element to where you live to just kind of relax, sit back and process things a little bit more.
She's nailed it. She's nailed it. You actually should be the wiki page of Croydon, just that description.
So visit Croydon, everyone.
Is that how you would say you kind of got into doing this? From what I understand is that you started documenting bands at school, and then those bands at school started doing more things, and then you just kind of started taking photos, and then you went to uni, and then your career blew up, and here we are.
That's kind of what, it's kind of what happened, but it's like a lot of the artists that were in school obviously aren't in like the same bands, or everyone kind of divided. So even within kind of like the people that you knew then, they've all gone and have got their own little circles that you then meet, and it's then their friends and then their friends, and then one person gets signed, so you end up getting in with like a label or someone. It's really exciting how it happens, because it just makes you kind of, gives you that feeling of like, I don't know what's ever going to come next, and it keeps you on your toes. And I think that's a big thing that I enjoy about the line of work, is that nothing's predictable, and you just one day could get an amazing email in your inbox, and for the next 2 weeks you could get none, and it does keep you on your toes. Like, I started shooting bands at Brit, which is the same as sixth form. It was that same kind of time period. After that, I went to uni and did a year of this like fashion course that I just didn't really vibe on. When I was on that course, I immediately connected with this girl called Millie, and me and her, just out of pure boredom, were like, we've got access to all this amazing equipment, we should use it. We should go out and just like take photos of bands that we thought were cool that were playing the venues that my mates had played before. So it's just kind of like having fun and going out in London. After we did that, we both kind of built up a bit of a portfolio and realized, you know, met people in the pit that said this is what they were doing full time. Because before that, I thought there's no way you could make a career out of music photography. It just, you know, there weren't the same amount of people doing it that there are now. It wasn't really a big thing on social media from my perspective. I hadn't seen loads of people doing it. So I just thought it must be like a hobby thing, or, you know, you'd have to be working for Getty Images or someone to be doing something like that. But then after like a year of being on that fashion course, both of us were just like, this isn't the right thing for us. All of our time was going on and just like taking pictures of musicians and going to gigs and getting excited about new music. And it just felt right. I guess it sounds so silly, because if someone said that to me, like if I had a kid and they were like, I'm not really focusing on my degree, I'm going out, I'm getting really excited about new music, I'd be like, what? But it just, I don't know, something about it just felt like it was the right path. So we both dropped out. And then funnily enough, a guy that worked at the uni doing a music marketing, well, then it was music journalism course, stopped me and said, oh, I've heard about you from my music students and you guys are all going out together. I feel like we're about to start this new course called music marketing, and I think you'd be perfect to join it if you'd be thinking about transferring as opposed to dropping out completely. And so I transferred onto that, and they kind of encouraged me to be going out to specific gigs and specific shows. And I was learning more so about marketing and the business side of music. And so meeting industry people became a really interesting thing for me, because I didn't realize there were so many different jobs within management companies and labels, et cetera. And photography was kind of just how I fit into all that. And then suddenly it comes back around, and then someone, you know, you're out one night with someone that you'd met at a pub and someone that you know is playing because they went to your school. And it just felt very organic and very natural. And I think that's why I was able to spend so much time and energy within that area. And I guess a huge benefit is being from near London anyway, because there's nowhere quite like London for networking in that sense.
Yeah, completely agreed. And interesting to hear it from, like, I guess your perspective as well, of that, you know, it came from uni, but then also you kind of like jumped around a bit, and then you went to those gigs and you were encouraged to like just meet people. And I think from everyone I've spoken to so far on the season, that's the main thing that literally everyone has said, is like, you just need to meet people. And I think if you don't have confidence, you've got to pretend you do. Like, I think you've got to fake it, because you kind of got to talk to people, you've kind of got to go out of your comfort zone, and you've kind of just got to like suck it up and talk to them. So whether you're confident or not, fake it until you make it, which I hate that phrase, but it's kind of true.
It is kind of true. It's I think less so about going into it being like, I know what I'm doing and I'm great. And it's more so about, you know, if there's someone sat across the room that you think they look cool, they look like my kind of person, or I know a bit about you and I really respect them. It's having the balls to go over and say, just start a conversation about anything. And that's the kind of fake it till you make it attitude that I would go with, as opposed to, you know, anything that, like, we're all nervous. Like, every single creative doesn't know what they're doing, really. No one has any idea. They're just going with what they think is right, what they think is fun, what they find interesting. And a huge element of that is the social side of it, because you have to be able to talk to people to communicate those ideas. Otherwise, the opportunities just aren't going to land themselves in your inbox. Definitely what you said about anyone that's like getting into it or that's starting out or is even already in it and is struggling to get out and about again after COVID, you know, unless you're going out and really putting in the grind in that sense to kind of follow things that you find interesting, fun and creative, it's going to be very hard to have longevity within what you're doing, because it's got to keep moving. It's got to keep going forward in the same way that, you know, that's reflected in the music industry and how quickly artists are picked up and dropped at the moment. Everything is constantly moving. And if you're not also constantly moving with it, it's quite easy to get left behind. And that's, I guess, the downside to that whole world.
I actually can't remember who told me this piece of advice. And they said something along the lines of, as soon as you think you're at the top, you're at the bottom. And you've got to always like remain on your toes because someone else is basically snapping at your heels at all time. I think there's believing in yourself, but also I think everyone knows and they don't quite know what they're doing. But actually remembering that there is always someone snapping at your heels to want to be in your exact position. And remembering that, like, you know, you are very easily replaceable is quite important. Like, I always think about it, like we've both shot for Festival Republic and I feel so grateful whenever I get an email to be on a photo team for like Leeds, Reading, Latitude, whatever.
Because it's what we've grown up looking at, isn't it? Like, I know it was the same for you, like going to Reading Festival and seeing people in the pit. Like my dream when I was younger was I went to see Arctic Monkeys play Reading. I bought like a day ticket and I was like watching the photographers go into the pit. And I just remember thinking, how the hell do I get into that position? What do you have to do? Like, you know, there was no talk about how you got into music photography or how, if those photographers were even just doing music, like I just didn't understand anything surrounding it. And then the second that it comes full circle and you find yourself in that position, it's kind of mind blowing, isn't it? Because you're like, you feel so fortunate to be there, but at the same time, you could so easily not be there and it could be any other person because there's so many people snapping at your ankles, but also just photography in general is such an oversaturated community right now that you really have just got to be doing your very best at all times.
I sit there in that photo cabin and just think like, oh my God, there's about 40,000 other people who have probably sent an email wanting this position that I'm in. I always just think that like, I better do a good job because otherwise I'm gone and they're never asking me back. Because it's so true. Like, obviously I don't let that thought take up my entire weekend, but you know, it is a passing thought that kind of passes in and out sometimes when you're like, oh my God, like I'm actually doing the thing that both I and so many others have literally dreamed of for years. And if I mess it up or if they don't like me or if the photos aren't good enough, I'm replaced by someone who is equally as good because there are that many people wanting to do that job that of course they could just pick and choose who they want because they've literally got the cream of the crop snapping at them being like, please employ me, please employ me. It's stressful. I feel a bit stressed sometimes doing that job, but it's also like the best job ever.
It definitely adds to the enjoyment though, doesn't it? Because it's like that pressure gives you the extra energy to, at, I don't know, 10:30 at night when it's pissing down with rain and you've got one more headliner on and it's the other side of the field and you've got to march your way through a bunch of screaming teenagers to get there. That's what gives you the extra kick to do it and do it with confidence and with fun and enjoyment, is that you remember all those things, you know, how fortunate you are to be there, and it just pushes you to do even better.
I think I felt a lot of pressure going in when I shot Latitude this summer, well, last summer now, because it was the first festival back after like a year off. The insane amount of like, I don't even know what feeling it was in my stomach, but I just felt, I don't think I ever felt what I did was enough or that the photos were enough or anything was enough, because there was this insane feeling of overwhelm by the fact we were all suddenly in a field again and none of us had done this for like 2 years and we were like, I don't understand what I'm doing. And the last time I was doing this, I was just like interning, and now I'm actually paid to be here and I still don't really know what I'm doing, but also I want to do a good job.
You kind of forget what it is that you judge something being good by. It's like, you go back into it and you're like, I mean, I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing, but I can't tell if it's enough. I can't tell if I'm doing it well enough. Can't tell if I'm, should I be shooting more? Should I be shooting less? Suddenly you forget all these things, don't you?
Just the biggest feeling of overwhelm. I actually wanted to talk to you about, because I've seen you write this in quite a few like blog interviews that you've done, whatever, about when you're on tour with Anne-Marie and you just finished your degree and then you went straight off to like a 6-week tour, and how on like, was it your 22nd birthday, you got sung happy birthday on stage? Was that just like the most surreal moment ever?
It was so fun. Like, that was one of those moments where I felt like exactly what we just said. Like, I just finished my uni degree and I was like, holy crap, this isn't a little van tour. Like, I was completely out of my comfort zone, but also was just absolutely like clawing and ready to be in that situation. Again, I'm just so incredibly lucky that it was with a group of people that are bloody amazing and so nice and genuine. It's quite difficult with touring stuff because A, you never know how genuine people are being. Like, you're put into a situation with, you know, 12 to 20 other people and are all living together every single day. And you kind of end up feeling like a family. And by the end of it, you kind of have to remember, you know, are we all this close or have we just been put in this situation together? But that tour just was such a family vibe, and every single person has stayed in such close contact. And there's little things like everyone got mugs on the last day of tour of all of us together, of like group shots and things like that, that just made it so special. And when people say like, what's your favorite tour that you've been on? Obviously you look at them all for completely different reasons, but that's one in my head that just was such a detrimental, like a huge moment in my life of like finally not having to worry about handing in a dissertation and just being able to fully focus on doing something that I love. Like, I'll never forget how special that moment was.
Yeah, I remember like seeing it on socials and being like, I can't even. Also, I would imagine from going from very like behind the camera to suddenly like on a stage with literally, I don't know how many thousand people just there, I would have been like, please stop. I don't like this, please. Because it's all, I'm not surprised. I'd be like, no, I stay behind. I wear black so no one sees me.
Oh, the knees were shaking, don't worry.
Oh my God, the fear. I couldn't even comprehend. I'd be like, what? No. You've got a pretty big level of like touring bands behind you for someone. I mean, I don't like to bring age into it, but I'm going to use it in this instance for someone of the age of 24. Like, you've done like a fucking lot.
I'm so glad you said that, because in my head now I've lost 2 years because of COVID and I just feel like I've done nothing.
You've done so much. I mean, if anyone goes on your Instagram, they're going to be like, what the heck? You look like you know everyone in the industry by the amount of people you've captured in the last like 4 years. It's insane.
And that's so nice. Thank you so much.
It's true. It's just the truth. And everyone sees it. And it's the same, like, I mean, it's not just you. Like, and so many photographers I follow, you go on their profiles and they're like, they must know everyone. Like, who don't they know? I think you must have a character, which I think I also have, which is when you meet someone, you just want to be their friend.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All strangers in my head. I'm like, how, like, if anyone looks cool, if I think anyone has something interesting about them or I respect them for a reason or another, like, first thing in my head is I just want to get to know them. I think that's probably a big reason why people get into music photography to begin with, is because you're not going to be interested in music photography if you're not a fan. And that kind of drives you to, I don't know, like, I just always wanted to understand more about the people making the music that I was listening to, and interviewing them wasn't really accessible to me, but photography was. And so I feel like that's probably why a lot of people doing the same thing that we do are so fucking nice. It's just because you've all got an interest in finding out more about behind the scenes, about what people do and documenting it, and getting excited about when you capture a moment and that person loves it and it's there forever. And that is a huge part of the job. That is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I think everyone is just so nice and just wants to be your friend, because they all just, again, yeah, just they love meeting new people. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to get into it, because it seemed insane online and I was like, I want to have this amount of friends, I want to meet these cool people, because everyone looks like they're having so much fun. Like, why wouldn't you want to be surrounded by like people who are literally looking like they're having the time of their lives? I mean, there is also the argument that the music industry is basically just full of people who are underpaid, very burnt out and very stressed, which is also the other argument to this, which is it looks very glamorous on Instagram, but actually in real life, like we were talking about before this, everyone is just very stressed and is worrying about when the work is going to come in. But online it looks very glamorous.
It's definitely glamorized on the internet, but I think the reason that everyone is in the situation that they're in is because you are underpaid, because everyone wants to work. You are overworked because every single person wants to the jobs, and not necessarily because of the money, but because they're excited about it and they're passionate about it and they're creative. And so as much as all of those negative things are true, again, it just reflects the kind of people that are in the industry. It is a really nice community. It becomes very clear who perhaps doesn't have the same mindset and is in it for the wrong reasons, because pretty much everyone else kind of groups together and is encouraging each other and getting excited. It's not really ever been like when someone wants a job and someone else gets it, you know, everyone's like, damn it, like, I wish I got that job. It's never really like that. It's always like, well, I can't wait to see what they do.
Give us a little day to day. So what does a day in your life, if you're on tour with a band, look like?
I think like a band toury day is probably like, wake up at 10:30, 11, feel gross, feel like greasy and disgusting, and climb out of a bunk and then see who else is awake and figure out your way into the venue, find the easiest place to shower, come back, get dressed. And then it's like a mission as to how many people you can get together to go and find some breakfast. Eat the breakfast, come back and immediately sit down and start, finish editing the stuff you've got left over from the night before. I usually like to get that done as early as possible, so there's a bit of time before the show where you can kind of go for a wander right after the artist has already done the post from the previous night. You are only in these spaces for like 1 or 2 days, and you know, you do have to at least try and get out a little bit, otherwise you go a bit mental. Yeah, I think that's kind of like the morning of it, and then go for a little explore, take some pictures, see if I can find some cool backdrops anywhere, come back and upload all of those, get them all done. What would I do then? Probably just like check in and see if there's anything else, like go through a mood board or anything like that that I've got in mind, finish off emails. Very fun, very exciting, very thrilling. Sit around in the green room for a bit and chat to everyone, make sure everyone's okay. There's probably like catering, I guess, depending on what size or what scale artist you're with. Run down to catering, get some more food. Usually get that in a takeaway box because no one likes to eat too close to set, just because it's like, if an artist eats too close to a set, they're just going to end up burping on stage or throwing up on stage. It's not going to be pretty. I think it's quite nice sometimes when you've finished a show, you come back, you sit down, and then you have dinner then. So that's usually what happens. They'll start getting ready, start doing warm-ups, and that's when you start filming things again and taking pictures straight onto the set and running around. I guess, to be fair, at some point in the day, I'll do like a location recce. Every single venue is obviously very different, and you need to know your way around beforehand, because if you leave that till the last minute of the set, then suddenly you're like, how do I get to the balcony? What's the quickest way? Like, do I have to run through people, or is there a backstage like corridor or something I can use? So yeah. First thing in the morning, I will always scout around the venue first, just to see if there's any photo spots that we should make the most of, or if I need to remember to go left instead of right to get up a quicker corridor to get to the top for a crowd shot at the end. And the last thing that I'll do before the artist goes on is just check with them that they're not planning on doing anything crazy in terms of like getting into the crowd or doing a particular jump or something. And I'll make sure that that's marked on a set list and put the set list as my phone background, so that during the set I can just quickly look and make sure I'm not going to miss anything.
What's your workflow? So you mentioned that obviously you mainly edit before you go to bed. What does that look like?
So the artist will come off stage and I'll go straight onto the bus. They'll kind of be like hanging around having a beer or like chatting to fans or doing like a bit of a meet and greet or whatever. I'll get like a couple of pictures of that and then just run straight back to the bus, edit as quick as possible, and then airdrop what needs, like, you know, my favorite photos and everything that the artist has requested. I'll edit that night and airdrop to them, and then the next morning when I get into the venue, I'll finish the rest of the edits and upload everything to Dropbox and send that back to management so that they've got it as well.
Honestly, thank God for airdrop. If an artist doesn't have an iPhone, I'm like, you need to rethink your life, because how am I going to give you these photos? Like, airdrop is the one.
I know, internet is not the one. It's so much easier, and the venue at Wi-Fi is so unreliable. It's actually something that I definitely need to find a solution to. I know you can get kind of like those memory stick plug-in Wi-Fi things. I need to kind of like dig into that. I thought that would be a very good investment to make, but definitely the biggest struggle is the Wi-Fi on tour, isn't it?
I've never done a bus tour. I've only ever done like a van and hotel tour. The photo side of it, I feel like when I get back to a hotel, that's when I'll go through and like categorize and do all of that side of it. And then obviously, because you're then waking up and then driving the next day, usually that's when I'll then sit and edit rather than doing it the night of, because if you're having to move around loads, it's literally impossible. You just won't ever sleep, because so I think it depends on where you are and what you're doing. That then reflects in how you do your workflow. Everyone does it differently, and it's really interesting to hear like everyone's like workflow as well and how they go about it. And you've done a lot. I mean, you've toured with a lot higher and bigger level band to what I have done, so it's interesting to hear it from your point of view as well.
It's literally always just as soon as people come off stage, they want like a few things straight away so they can see what it's like. And then if you're like, I need a little bit more time, can we just push this to tomorrow morning? It's usually fine. But it definitely depends on the scale of the artist. Like, the bigger they are, the quicker they want it.
Yeah, because the more demanding their fans are to be like, give me their content.
Exactly. But I tell you what's weird though, is at the moment I've realized people kind of want iPhone stuff a lot more than the photography stuff, which is bizarre. It's like the job role is completely changing. It's now like, cool, so we need live shots, we need iPhone videos for TikTok, and we need iPhone BTS, just because the artist loves everything to look super lo-fi and intimate and accessible. And so it's kind of changed recently. It's like more people kind of want the iPhone stuff right away, send the video stuff over to the label straight away so that they can start working on TikToks, which yes, they do. The artist does not do, for anyone listening. and then the photo stuff's just kind of left to you creatively. And if they particularly like any of them, they'll post them, but it's definitely less pressure on the actual photography itself.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And actually it's crazy, you know, after like 3, 4, 5 years studying like a photography degree, you're like, oh great, so I could just use my iPhone for all of this. Like, that's such a fantastic thing to know.
Yeah, love that. Thank you you so much for challenging me creatively.
Such a good thing for people listening to be like, okay, if I can build like a budding platform on TikTok, or I can build like a budding, I know how to use an iPhone. Actually, the best camera you have is in your hand, as like the whatever famous photographer said that. But it is actually true. Like, you know, these iPhones, what, I sound like some 40-year-old man, these iPhones, but they're actually like pretty good.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I don't think we're going to probably look back at those photos when we're 60 and be like, those are the shots that made my career. But in terms of like social content, looking at an artist's profile, it is really nice if you've got iPhone stuff mixed in with photography, because it does make them feel a lot more accessible. It makes them feel a lot more personal. And that's important with a fan base, especially after the last couple of years where people haven't been able to tour and reach out and talk to their fans. It's so important that people feel like they can reach out to them online.
Completely agreed. How do you balance your time? Because you do a lot.
I don't balance it very well, because I think a lot of my personal life is also work life. I think a lot of my work life is also my personal life. I think the line's just completely blurred. And so it doesn't really feel like a work-life balance. It just feels like one. And I guess it's good in a lot of ways and it's bad in a lot of ways, but I think it's more so good than bad, because it just means that, I don't know, you're able to keep progressing. And even when you don't really think you're doing anything, somehow you overanalyze it, and then you're like, well, I guess this was kind of productive, or I learned this from it. And as long as you're recognizing the things that you're learning, it pushes you forward.
Do you find that hard, having like that line blur, and when friendships and like when you are friends with musicians and that does cross over, if for some reason like a tour doesn't work out or something doesn't work out? Because I find that I take it kind of personally, because that line between work and personal is so blurred that it's hard to have your work hat on and be like, it's fine, it's just my career, and then your actual ego be like, oh, I'm really sad.
I think the hardest part is understanding and that, you know, you don't own an artist that's your mate. You know, you're all creatives working out there, and it's healthy and it's completely correct that they should be working with more than one person. I don't think you should just work with one photographer or one videographer, because everyone ends up taking things for granted. If you see someone shot in a different way by someone else, it pushes you, because they're seeing something that you didn't see, and then it makes you think about it differently, and that allows you to grow as a creative too. But I think a lot of photographers that are mainly working with one artist really struggle with that. I think, you know, it's easy to think, well, that's my gig, and get kind of possessive over it. But I've never personally had that. And anyone that I know that does behave like that, I don't really like their attitude.
No, and I completely agree with that. And I think the same. If you can have like multiple creatives working on one project, and you see it like all the time from very, like even you work a lot with Holly Humberstone, but Holly Humberstone also works with other people, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, she has this incredible like online kind of like fandom, but also like imagery that just is not, and that's nothing against you who also shoots her, but it is all different, and that's a good thing.
No, I love it.
It takes a while to learn that, and I think it's something that I have definitely learned in the last like 4 weeks. Lol. It's good to feel uncomfortable and like have those like thoughts and be like, okay, like how can I personally learn from this particular thing, and how can that like help me grow as a creative? Because it will help.
But also it makes you think, like it makes you think about what your work should look like more, and where your place should be within that. So like if there's a gig and someone else is better suited for it, that's fine. You're not meant to be able to do everything. You need to take that pressure off yourself, because there's things that other people will be better at than you, and there's things that you'll be better at than the people. And it's about learning what your strengths are. And also, if they're shooting with another photographer and you're like, whoa, how the hell did they get their lights set up like that? Can you take a sneaky BTS picture? Like, you have to learn from other people.
Yeah, exactly. And just be like, excuse me, I would really like to know how you did that. So can you just tell me how they did it so I can find out, please? Thank you. Apart from the wonderful experience you had on stage, Ace 22, blowing out your birthday candles in front of lots and lots of people, do you have any other pinch me moments from your time so far in the industry?
My most recent one, Alex Turner taught me how to use a camera.
Oh my goodness, your inner child must have absolutely died.
It was really fun. It was like, so when I was growing up, I listened to a lot of Arctics, and I listened to a lot of like Last Shadow Puppets, and my whole kind of vibe was very dad rock when I was younger, like in the best possible way. I loved like Kasabian and everyone like that. Those were all the first festivals and gigs that I was going to. I got the message from Miles during the summer to do a festival with him. And I was really excited for that, because I've, you know, like listened to him for a really long time. And we've just started to have mutual friends. So a couple of mates of mine called Dave and Oscar, who go under the name of Sunglasses for Jaws, who've just produced his latest record. And they'd kind of said, I think, oh, you should do something with our mate Phoebe. And so I went down for that. And after that one festival, he was like, I'd love to do a music video with you. And so we started talking about that. And he wanted something really simple, and he wanted it to be quite Beatles influenced. And he had this great track. And we just kind of like envisioned it being a really chilled out, walking around the park kind of vibe. And because it was going to be so chilled out and the turnaround was quite fast, I said, you know, I think we should shoot this on Super 8 in order to make it look as cool as you are and as cool as your image is. The difficult thing there was that my video camera, my Super 8, was in LA with a mate of mine was borrowing it at the time. So Mars was like, don't worry, I think Alex has actually got one that we could use. And I was like, oh, right, okay. I'm not going to know how to use it though. And he was like, we'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, low-key panicking because I really wanted the video to be amazing and I wanted to do the song justice and him justice. And then it got to like a few days before the shoot and he was like, so Alex is just going to teach you how to use the camera. Yeah, so that was fun. That was a bit of a pinch me moment, but at the same time it was so fun because I felt like this is the most natural way that you could possibly learn how to use a Super 8 camera. Like, coming from someone that you know can use one very well, the aesthetic is completely what you're going for. And it's fun and it's exciting. You know, I wasn't really stressed out because I don't know, it just felt natural.
What a great, like, little story for your kids. If you want kids, you might not want kids for your cats, dogs, whatever. I'm not bothered. What is in the pipeline?
So tours are starting to kind of come through at the moment, but nothing is set in steel. It's all talks. And I always hate being like, oh, might be going with this person or this person and like getting super overexcited about it just because what we were saying at the start of this, it's like everyone is at the moment kind of freaking out about how many different people are touring and it's all been very last minute at the moment. And so I'm not going to say the names just in case I look like an absolute dickhead and something doesn't work out. I'm fingers crossed going to do my first exhibition soon. So that's kind of what I'm working on at the moment and I'm really excited about. I have no idea what I'm doing at all. I'm like trying to figure it out. I don't know what you need to make an exhibition or like how to put one on. Currently, I'm just like looking at a lot of other people's, you know, kind of small scale ones and the different kinds of paper that you can print things on and how you hang things and start thinking about what pictures I want to put up and who I need to message to make sure that the rights are okay for that, because that's a whole other stress in itself.
Especially when you've shot things with different people, you've been at a festival, and that's something that also people listening to this might not know about, as to like most of the time a photographer will remain copyright holder of their images unless someone buys the copyright from you, which is rare, but it doesn't really happen unless you've got a lot of money, and then it will happen. But then depending on if you're shooting for festivals, they often own like different parts of images, and the same with, I would imagine, if you're shooting for different labels, they potentially might own different rights.
I don't know about you, but I never really am smart enough to take a picture of the contract that I've just signed either. I just sign it and I'm like, yeah, cool, get me into the pit. And then I get there and I'm like, I have no idea if I'm allowed to post these after. I just need to go through and figure all that out. Do you find that quite a weird thing? Because I always do.
I would say I'm pretty good. I'm not like the best, but I'm kind of good with it. And I'm pretty good at making sure that when I send work over, that they know that I own it. I'm very like, you do not own this and you can't do what you want with it unless you pay me more money. And then they pay, if and when, will pay more money to then do what they want with it. And I'm like, okay, cool. But I think it's having that conversation and not being scared to be quite firm and be like, look, this is mine. This is my art. You can use it, but you don't own it. Because I think a lot of people, when you send them a file, they're like, well, I can do what I like. And you're like, no, they can't.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You learn that as you go along. It's like you do one shoot for nothing and it ends up being used for everything. And you think, well, I should be paid for A, it going to prep, or B, if it's being an artwork, or if you're making merch out of it, that should be a percentage. There's all that. But then there's also, completely separate to that, you know, you do one big gig, like a festival or something, you sign the contract on the way in, and sometimes you don't get sent a copy of that contract. So it's like, have you done this with live shows as well? I bet you have.
I don't think I've actually ever had to sign a contract for any live shows I've done, because if I do a live show, I've never really done much for press. I've mainly just done it like direct for an artist, and it's been direct with them rather than through a label or like on my own accord. So I've never really had to like go through that process.
There's like a couple of gigs that I shot like, must be like 4 years ago now, that I'd love to go and, you know, get prints from. And I remember signing a contract on the way in and I just have never received a copy of it. So I've got no idea what my actual rights are. So now I've got to go back and find their PRs and then ask them about that specific contract from that one show. But, you know, I guess as long as they're all okay with it and I ask, they'll probably be quite nice about it.
I've heard of that happen to people. For example, I remember Boardmasters this year, to anyone who wanted to shoot him, that they had to sign a contract which basically signed away, and now don't quote me on this because I wasn't there, this is how I heard this through someone else, but that they had to sign away all rights to their images and they weren't even allowed to post them on their own socials. I think that was what it was, or it was something big. So quite rightly, no one shot the show because they were like, no, we're not going to do that, because why should you have rights to something that's mine and you're not going to pay me for it?
But the point is, the more people that stand up and say no to that, you know, then it has to change, because he's going to end up wanting the promo, wanting the press. And then you put yourselves in a better position as photographers because you've stood up for the things that you need. But that, again, is a huge problem within sort of like the paid side of it, is that there's so many people wanting to do jobs for free that it's quite difficult now to fight your rate, because there are all those people behind you, you know, pushing through with a lower one. And unless everyone decides and says, puts their foot down and says, you know, you realize by doing this for free or by charging too little, you're taking money off of someone else and the value off of photography overall. You know, that is basically happening in that world as well as with the contract side of festivals. Like, there's so many things like that that people really need to group together on in order to change.
What is there? Like, there's loads of like unions. Like, there's a union in like film to make sure everyone's paid fairly, but I don't, and there is like a union within photography to make sure there's like kind of rates, but I don't think it's specialized enough. Phoebe, we need to go into business. Maybe this is our thing. There needs to be some kind of union that allows all music photographers across the UK to not undercut each other, or there needs to be some kind of like rates card system, because there is in fashion and even in production, there seems to be, again, more of like a hierarchical. Is that a word?
Yeah, it's like, for this line of work, this is the kind of correct fee. Whereas photography, it feels so random. It's like you ask one person what they charge for something and it's completely different to what another person would charge.
And you ask someone, and generally everyone, I feel like in my immediate circles, is kind of charging the same. And like, I check my rates against like friends and go like, look, I've pitched this, what do you think? And they go, oh, I would charge like slightly higher, or I've charged this for this and this was similar, so maybe go like a little bit lower, etc. But we're all basically in the same ballpark, but you just don't know. It's actually quite scary. And then that's, again, how
it's terrifying, because it's a stab in the dark, isn't it?
Again, you're kind of just like chucking this random like tiny like item into this absolute like big pond, and you're like, well, I hope you float, because I have no idea what everyone else has thrown into the ocean, so I'm hoping that my fee wasn't ridiculously unreasonable. But you just don't know. It's all ridiculous.
So bang on. And that's what it feels like when tours come your way now. It's like we were seeing before, there's so many cool ones happening. And this year, obviously, everyone's touring pretty much at the same time, because no one's been able to do it with COVID happening over the last 2 years. And you kind of feel like every single one that comes into your inbox and you reply saying, yes, please, I'm so keen for this, like, I've got loads of ideas. You just don't know what anyone else is saying, because they've had the exact same time off and I've got the same drive and needs, and everyone's going to be ready this year for it.
Makes it feel more intimidating, but at the same time, kind of exciting, because you know that the content that you're going to be seeing online from like March through to November is just going to be top tier. It's going to be elite. It's going to be insane.
I feel like also how we were saying before, everyone was kind of like overworked recently. They've now all had the break that everyone kind of needed, I think, and been forced to take a break. So it's going to be so interesting to see how that's reflected in people's work this summer.
What is your biggest piece of advice for someone listening to this who is probably a budding freelance photographer?
Hang on, I wrote a little note for this. Never be too scared or intimidated to talk to someone when you're working. Don't get disheartened if you have a bad shoot, and try to actively think about what you've learned from each new experience so that you have time to recognize it.
That's lovely. What a great piece of advice. I think that's totally true. And I think, again, having time to reflect and be like, okay, this didn't go right because this, it's not just because I'm shit. Because I think a lot of the time as creative people, we go, oh my God, it went so badly because I'm so awful. But actually it probably didn't go right, because if it's a live gig, the lighting person decided to like put strobes halfway through the set and you're like, that's not really my fault.
There's so much out of your control, and everyone has a bad day. Everyone takes a bad picture. There isn't a photographer in the world that hasn't taken a bad picture. And all it means is that the more bad ones you take, the more you realize and value it when you take a really good one.
She's hit the nail on the head. Who do you want to shout out? I'm excited to hear who you say, to be honest. Yeah, who do you think's killing it at the moment?
So some of these are photographers and some like work in the music industry. So I'll just like reel them off. Martin, whose name is Ginger Dope on Instagram, has been touring with Arlo Parks, and I'm completely obsessed with them. Like, they have the most amazing grades, and we were talking about the kind of presets that they use and have made over the years. And I'm just absolutely in awe of the colors that come out, you know, from all of the shoots and tours that Martin's done. It's just ridiculous. So shout out to them. Shout out to Holly Whittaker, who is an amazing photographer. She kind of focuses on the South London music scene and gets really creative. She does lots of fabrics, does a lot of work with like Goat Girl and Shame and that kind of circle. So shout out to her. There's these two girls called Harley and Lola who have got this kind of like gig company, and they have like a radio show as well called Never Heard Of Yet. They're putting on amazing new artists in venues across London. So I'm going to shout out them. Danny Sprague, who is a recording engineer and mixer. She's been working on stuff with like, you name it, Rolling Stones to Sam Fender's latest record. She's been working on so badass. A girl called Liv White, who is a manager at Chess Club Records, and she's got this post-punk band that she's working with at the moment called Legs, and she's just fucking killer. Like, she's so on it. She's getting them featured in all the coolest magazines, working with the sickest photographers. And I just find the art that's coming out of that really inspiring. And you know, she's the one putting that all together. So hats off to her. And she's a legend too. So that always helps. Caroline Smith, who is a tour manager. She's working with Youngblood at the moment and like Zara Larsson. I think she's done stuff with Pale Waves as well. But she is incredible. So badass. So on it all the time. So organized. And just really lovely. A few more. I've got Natasha and Jazz, who work for Anne-Marie. Natasha is the PA and Jazz is her manager. And they are just always so just together and organized and kind and caring and make everyone feel so valued that kind of works with any team that I've seen either of them in. They make everything fun as well, which is always a plus when you're away for weeks and weeks. The last one I'm going to go with is my friend Daisy Carberry, who does marketing at BMG. And she's in the middle of starting up a charity to help get more women into the music industry. So she's kind of got two things going on that I think are really amazing.
You honestly, that was a stellar list. Thank you for preparing notes. I mean, I spoke to Danny in season 2, so if anyone wants to go back and listen to that conversation, it is available on all good listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it. It's there. She is so good, such a genius. She was talking in that episode all about recording the Rolling Stones, and she like, I just think she's so sick.
Can you just imagine being like, yeah, I just fucking work with the Rolling Stones.
And like, Martin is amazing. Oh my God, just the content, everything, all of that list.
Also, I was such a big fan of the videos that were coming out of that. They did this thing where like at the end of every single show.
Of Arlo's tour, wasn't it?
Arlo would do like kind of poetic, you know, speaking about how the show went. And it just kind of sounded like she'd written a poem for every single gig. It was gorgeous. And there were these stunning visuals to go alongside it, as well as all the photos.
Honestly, I remember watching those and being like, whoa, that's so stunning. And also, like, you've worked with Arlo a fair bit in the past as well, so it's nice to know that. I mean, not that you would ever be like, how dare someone else work with someone else, but again, as we were talking about before, that like,
oh no, we literally did that, like, we've done shows together, like me and Martin then went out and got cake before the London one together. We were like, let's go get cake.
And that's what's so important, I think, and what people don't think this industry is that actually everyone is pals, and you can, it is okay to have two people working on the same gig with the same artist, because everyone brings something different to the table, because what they might produce will be different to what you produce, and definitely vice versa. And it's a good thing to showcase different levels of talent. Like, that's not a bad thing at all. Actually, it gives different content and a different perspective, because no two brains are the same.
No, when you really respect the other people that are shooting alongside you as well, it's nice, because there's always that element of, okay, well, if they're there, I'm going to go somewhere else. And you don't ever really know what you're going to get out of that, you know, by being in a different place. You might get a shot that you wouldn't have got before, because you'd have been in the same spot the other person would have. Like, there's so many different things that come from it. And it is just so important, I think, to make friends and to be kind and to enjoy what you're doing. And that isn't going to happen if you're competing with everyone around you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think just having that kind of like kindness to everyone you meet, and again, it is about who you know, and making sure that everyone you do meet, you leave a good impression with. And that can be kind of overwhelming at times, but it's also really nice, because it means that you end up with friends at all pockets of the industry, and that's really exciting. And when someone moves to a different job, you go, oh my God, like, that's so cool. Like, and it always reflects back, and they always remember you. Like, someone emailed me the other day, were like, oh, I'm a friend of such and such, and I was like, wow, I haven't worked with him in like 4 years. But so nice to remember.
But how sweet is it that you must have come up in that conversation and been like, oh yeah, like, I fucking love Em, like
how nice. And I was like, wow, that's so sweet, like, thanks so much. But yeah, you don't know what impression you make on someone until afterwards, so the best thing that you can do is just like smile and be nice. Thank you so much for being a guest on the third season of the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you. I'm so glad we could finally do it.
I know, maybe next time we need to be in person with a coffee, not just on Zoom, but maybe at some point that will happen.
With a coffee and a nice slice of cake.
Oh, don't. I actually am really hungry. And so any talk of food, my stomach's going to start going.
It'll be as bad as mine, but yeah, give it 10 minutes.
I don't know if you're going to be able to hear, but throughout this whole episode, Phoebe's stomach has been gurgling. I don't know how good a job Al has done.
No, you have to cut it out. No.
Al, mental note, edit that out. Yeah, okay. I'm going to not hang up. I'm going to stop this recording now. How do I press stop?
If you did enjoy this episode, please make sure to rate and subscribe, and ensure to share with your friends and post on Instagram. It's really lovely to see when you guys are listening to these episodes rather than just seeing random numbers on streaming sites. So I really hope you enjoyed listening to this. And as always, we'll be back next week with another beautiful guest.